Welcome. Well, since Ms. Shreve left the state and left you in charge of this committee, are you ready to get us started, Dr. Bohansky?
Well, let's get going. Can we take a roll call?
Certainly. Dr. Bohansky?
Here.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Mr. Diner?
Present.
Dr. Davey is absent, and Ms. Shreve is absent, but we have a quorum.
Yeah. Let's move ahead with our next agenda item. Heidi, can you update us?
Certainly. I've drafted the minutes from the August 26th meeting, and I have loaded them to the portal for your review, and we can take a vote on whether the draft can be approved or if edits need to be made to the draft.
Are there any changes, updates, additions?
I move to approve the minutes.
Seconded.
Is there a second?
Second.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All in favor, aye.
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 And having no opposed, we will approve the minutes. Thank you very much. And thank you for taking such comprehensive minutes. I don't think we've ever had comprehensive overview of the minutes that were there. All right, moving along. I just lost my agenda. Hold on. I'll pull it up again.
Dr. Bohansky, I can tee off the discussion for agenda item number 4, if you'd like, which is consideration of combining the Legislative Committee and the Administrative Rules Committee.
Ed, please.
From what I can tell from the board's history, at one point in time, for a period of many years, actually, it was a single committee. A single committee considered both recommendations for statutory changes as well as administrative rule changes. And at some point in the past, 2013, it seems the committee bifurcated into two different committees. And I don't know the history or the rationale behind that decision. But what I'm requesting is for this committee to consider whether for ease of addressing issues that cross-cut statutes and rules, and to sort of, you know, keep policy decision recommendations in with one cohesive group working together, that if this committee is willing to take on the role of administrative rules oversight, I think that would be advantageous for the reasons that I cited. I also want to bring my rule writing expertise to this committee and in the process assume more of that responsibility than maybe staff has done in the past. So I'm not suggesting that by taking on this new role, it's going to double or triple your workload. I think that working through me and with me, you can give me those high level recommendations, approve them, have the board approve them, and then I can proceed with the labor intensive piece. So that is what I want you to request today. And the way that I see this is that we can take this recommendation to Ms. Shreve since she has committee appointment authority. One other addition that we might want to consider from the Rules Committee as it last existed, the members were Dr. Bohansky, Dr. Flowers, who we know his term on the board has ended, and the other member was Dr. Malott. I think we would all agree that Dr. Malott is a key resource on a lot of topics, and we can either ask her to join this committee or be a subject matter expert when her expertise is would help inform this committee. So that's what I'd like for you to consider.
I'll fill in a couple other details for you. We separated committees essentially because of the behavior analyst addition. And all of a sudden, we were confronted with a whole new section of our statute, and we had to come up with an incredible amount of rules and rule writing. And through full cooperation, and this is before we had members of behavior analysts on the board, rather they were public members sitting in the rules committee, we were able to create a separate rules committee to handle what was essentially a major task that would have consumed the legislative agenda. that being said, and with essentially that work completed, merging those two things back together certainly makes some sense to me. Is there any other discussion?
If I may, Dr. Bohansky.
Please go ahead.
Thank you. I also like the idea of having Dr. Malott involved in this committee. My only concern would be then this would be a 6-member committee on an 11-member board, so we would have a quorum, and I don't know if that affects anything else.
It's a sixth of a 10-member, is that correct?
Right.
Yeah.
So that would not be permissible. One of you would have to go.
These darn open meeting rules, and the way they're written, hell, 6 of us couldn't go to the state association and have a sit-down dinner without it being noted. And we've run into these kind of issues before. Having Dr. Malott as a matter expert would probably be the way we have to. And certainly that's why the Rules Committee was the way it was, because Dr. Malott actually ran a behavior analyst program at NAU and had extensive background in the requirements and training and issues that were involved. So I would also suggest that Dr. Malott's employment with the Board of Regents or the state of Arizona has sometimes rendered her abstaining and not being able to participate in some legislative discussions that involved topics of relation that were brought forward by the universities. And that she's appropriately abstained and withdrawn from committees when those topics occurred. And I think they're likely to occur again in the near future, and having her on the committee would force an abstention. Having her on the committee would force a quorum issue with the board. And while I dearly appreciate her and her expertise, I think having a subject matter expert position for her when things occur seems to make the most sense. Do we need a something, or I think the chair has board appointment authority that's pretty broad. Do we just leave this to Tammy with our recommendation that we merge the two?
Yes, that would be sufficient.
Then if there's a consensus, so be it. We will rules committee die a peaceful death, and thank everybody for their involvement and participation with that. I got my phone working again, so we can go to agenda item 5. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding information from representatives from the Psychological Clinical Science Accreditation System, CSAS, on the proposed legislation for the upcoming legislative session. And do we have a representative to present?
Yes, I'm here to present on that issue.
Okay, Dr. Corbin?
Yes.
Please go ahead.
Yes, so some of you know we have been working on this legislation for several years now. Last year got to regulatory affairs, and then COVID-19 hit and everything sort of got shut down. So we are back this year, and the proposal is to create licensure parity for PC SaaS programs such that we would change the language in the statute rather than saying that students from APA approved programs are deemed to have met the educational requirements that students from either APA or PC SaaS accredited programs are deemed to have met the educational requirements for licensure. That is the only change we're proposing. I know in past years there were some other things that we talked about, but that we're simply asking for making that one change to the statute to include PC SaaS. Most of you, or at least many of you, are already quite familiar with what PC SaaS is and these issues. But briefly, for anybody who is not familiar, PC SaaS is the Psychological Clinical Science Accreditation System. So this is a second accrediting body along with the Commission on Accreditation of the APA. And PC SaaS really developed out of concern about APA in particular moving away from its scientific foundations, and that some of the policies and procedures for accreditation made it difficult for science-based programs to really provide the kind of training that they want to provide to their students. Because the APA curriculum is so regimented and so standardized across all programs that it makes it difficult, for example, to get specialized training in particular areas like health psychology or addictions. And so that was really foundational to the push for PC SaaS. Since we first proposed this legislation a number of years ago, quite a lot has changed. PC SaaS has gone from about 20 accredited programs, I would guess, when we first came to this group, to 43 now. PC SaaS is now recognized by the Department of Defense and the VA. PC SaaS programs are now allowed into the APIC match. And this last year, the Council of University Directors of Clinical Psychology, CUDCUP, represents the 175 university-based clinical training programs, officially endorsed parity and encouraged consideration of licensure parity for PC SaaS program students. So that's just a little bit of updates. Again, I don't want to take too much of your time repeating things that you already know, but I'm happy to answer additional questions about PC SaaS.
Thank you very much, Dr. Corbin. Are there any questions from committee members? I just have one, which is my standard one. Can you provide the board with a standards manual for the approval of your programs?
The answer would be the same as it has been, that the information about the accrediting procedures and review procedures are provided on the PC SaaS website. I'm not PC SaaS or a representative of PC SaaS. I am the director of clinical training for ASU and along with Dave Sabara, who's the DCT at University of Arizona, we are supporting this legislation, but PC SaaS has not provided to me or anybody else the exact procedures of their review process. So no, I can't provide you information beyond what is provided on the PC SaaS website.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I've thoroughly read the website and I understand accreditation procedures. I run the largest COA accredited intern program in the country now. Going through our self-study and going to meet the standards, some of which are bizarre, and I certainly agree with it. And I'm certainly not a particular fan of APA. But what they do have is a standards manual that sets forth what the requirements are, clearly from A to Z. And those requirements match our law and are the ones accepted by the licensing boards and the Association of Licensing Boards across the country. And if at all possible, Doctor, if you could give us some name of someone to contact, staff would be glad to do that. I think it would be fair and appropriate for board members to have a chance to look at the standards manual and the APA standards manual and say these are equivalent or these are a concern. And if we know how to get a hold of one, I'd love to see what standards programs have to meet. As I understand it now, and I may be wrong, as you're accurate, things have changed, more things are going on. Here in Arizona, that would cover your program at ASU and Dr. I'm sorry, I got his name. Sabar's program at U of A. But the largest clinical and counseling and ed psych training programs in the state are now out of NAU. And not one of those programs would be eligible, despite the fact that they run the largest clinical program in the state now. And also have a counseling psychology and ed psychology program. And their students are eligible for licensure, but their programs are not eligible for accreditation. And that continues to be a little hitch in my giddy up. But I would ask, if at all possible, a name or contact information so staff could obtain a standards manual.
So I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Dr. Corp.
I'm happy to provide you with the contact information. I think Alan Kraut would be the person to reach out to, and I'm happy to pass along that email.
If you could email that to staff at the board, I'd appreciate it tremendously, and I think it's worthy of a fair review, and I have no problem in the impartial folks looking at that and giving it a fair review.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't have any way to know what they, you know, can or will provide, but I'm happy to pass along the information and have you reach out to them. You know, I'd say in response to the point about programs at NAU or counseling programs, that just to be clear, that PCSAS is not meant to be a accrediting body to replace the APA, right, or the Commission on Accreditation. It's meant to be accreditation system that can exist along with the Commission on Accreditation, and that has slightly different goals in terms of what the programs are trying to accomplish. They both are designed to produce health service providers, right, who are able to be licensed to practice in clinical psychology, but they have, you know, a different focus in their research. And there's no reason that a program couldn't be eligible for PCSAS as long as their training model was one that focused substantially on training clinical scientists to go into research-focused careers in clinical psychology. So there's no exclusion criteria for any particular type of program to be included. It just has to do with the training models.
I understand that, and generally our focus has been to license programs or degrees that are looking at health science and practice instead of being as research focused, and that's the age old debate that created the American Psychological Society, that morphed into the Association for Psychological Science. And having been a member of both during that, I appreciate those issues. Certainly you've had past presidents like Beth Loftus, who are dear friends of mine, and I've certainly been involved with both associations. And I do see they're having a different focus. And that's why I'm asking for a standard. If in fact what they're claiming is equivalency, and there's equivalency, I'm just looking to see equivalency. And that's the big question I have. I recognize that some people like to believe that a research focus is superior to a clinical practice focus, and that may be true or may not be true. And I know for 55 years we've generally focused on practice, and I don't want to get into the debate here. The debate is for the board. But I think what would inform the debate is that standards manual. Are there questions from other board members?
Dr. Bohansky?
Dr. Margaret, please.
So I followed the link that Ms. Pekonen included in her memo, and there is an accreditation tab for PCSAS now that has eligibility standards, general accreditation standards, exemplars of evaluation criteria. So I know that there's a lot more than there used to be.
I'm just asking for the manual, not the summary version.
Got it.
And I know if you've been through accreditation, and I know Dr. Corbin had that damn APA standards manual is, I think, where the phone books went to live. It's so damn thick and crazy. And I'm not asking that they get thick and crazy. I'm just asking for the manual. I'm just trying to be fair.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question, a little bit of direction from the committee? Would it be informative to also ask for a crosswalk across the two sets of standards if such a thing existed?
It would be helpful. I would ask staff to put that together. And I'd ask if we could put this on the agenda for a board meeting quickly, because we do have a legislative session coming up in, oh dear, too fast for me to even think about. And the last thing I'd ask for staff is whether or not there's a representative from the other side of the, so that board members can query at that board meeting.
Thank you, Dr. Chair.
Good. Are there any other questions, board members or members? Remember what forum I'm in here. Hearing none. Thank you very much, Dr. Corbin. And we'll continue this discussion at the next board meeting. Then move us to agenda item number 6. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding Arizona Psychological Association's legislative plan to establish prescriptive authority for psychologists. Heidi, is there an update?
Dr. Barry has agreed to join us today to give us an overview of this issue. You'll probably recall at the September 4th board meeting, the board was asked to submit a letter of support for ASPA's efforts to secure some financial support from APA to move forward with this initiative. And such a letter was drafted and approved, but this committee and the board have yet to address the bigger issue, which is whether to support this initiative that ASPA is pursuing.
And I see the eminent Dr. Barry has joined us. Dr. Barry.
Dr. Bohansky, nice to see you. Thank you for having me. Members of the committee, I was asked to join you today for a brief update on our prescriptive authority effort. I can tell you that As of today, we have submitted a grant application to APA. The maximum award that APA is willing to give to state associations is $10,000. So we actually have a member of our committee who has an uncle in New Mexico who is a physician, has prescribing psychologists working in his office, really likes their work, and is willing to testify to that effect. So I have proposed that we use that grant money to put him on video and make a public service announcement sort of thing that we can play to various constituents and in particular to legislators. So we'll see if that happens. We have been advised that we should plan on having a dedicated lobbyist for this effort. The lobbyist for the state association has other responsibilities and is limited in terms of her time by our limited budget. So we are in the process of raising money. Our budget for this particular effort is $50,000 at this point. We hope to be able to find a dedicated lobbyist who can help us with this. It's an election year, everybody knows, and we don't know what the state legislature is going to look like in January, whether it's going to be dominated by a Republican majority or a Democrat majority. So we don't have a sponsor yet in either house. We want somebody who is part of the majority party. We've got people targeted in either case. We'll see where that goes. And because of all of these issues, it was also advised that we target introduction of the bill for January of 2022. We are not going to try to introduce that this year. We are going to go through the sunset process in the fall of 2021.
Sunrise.
We will have a sponsor. We certainly will have a functioning legislature, we hope, at that point, and be able to come in to the second session of the legislature and have all of our ducks lined up and ready to push this all the way through. In conversations previously with Heidi, she has indicated that it will, if this passes and is signed into law by the governor, it will create a variety of issues for the board. So we are proposing that the effective date of the expanded scope of practice be January of 2023, giving Heidi and the board a chance to adjust their budget and expand their scope of practice to accommodate the expanded scope for psychologists. So there's been a lot going on. That's a pretty quick and dirty update, but I think that sort of brings you up to date. We really do appreciate the letter of support from the board, and we are counting on you to continue to be interested and as supportive as you feel you can be as we move through this process.
Well, thank you, Dr. Berry. It certainly sounds much more rounded out than last time, and at least gives me a clear indication of how that grant might be spent and what the efforts, which I think are well thought out in terms of a timeline, make the most sense. Has the group established a curriculum or what they believe to be the appropriate set of requirements for an Arizona scope of this in psychopharmacology.
My understanding is that we are trying to closely follow the standards proposed nationally, really through APA. And Midwestern University has made some preliminary indications that they might be interested in developing such a psychopharm program so that we have one in state pending the approval of this bill.
Very good. Certainly there are national standards established by the National Association. There is a national test. There are requirements for coursework. There are requirements for internship. And in my reading of those over the recent past, those actually exceed nurse practitioners' training. Certainly that's another healthcare group which has obtained prescriptive authority. So I think, again, it sounds like folks are thinking this through fairly well. Are there any questions from committee members?
Dr. Meyer.
Dr. Meyer, please.
Hi, thank you, Dr. Berry. So congrats on getting the grant proposal submitted.
Thank you.
Just in time. The a little bit of the concern that some of the members of the board had expressed was that we were, by doing a letter, we were suggesting we supported the legislation as opposed to just supporting the pursuing of AZPA pursuing funding from APA. And so we changed our letter, the wording in that, but the concern was in the description that we received. It's again saying that the board is in support of prescription privileges. And it makes me a little concerned that how that's being phrased.
You know what? You're right. And I was supposed to change that. And I did not. I understand your concern. And I apologize. That pulling a variety of documents together today, really, to submit that to APA, it literally slipped my mind. I'm sorry.
I completely understand. Just if this same material is being sent out to others, if you could just change that, that'd be great. Until or if or when the board does provide that support.
I will change that as soon as we're done here.
And so thank you for this material. The other question I had was, I had asked you last time if it would be the Board of Psychologist Examiners that would have regulatory jurisdiction in this, and what you've submitted looks like it does. It would go to us. Is that how most other states with prescriptive privileges are handled?
My understanding is yes. It's not universal. I know that Louisiana in particular has prescription authority for psychologists vested in the board, their medical board. I think there are issues surrounding that. So our strong preference would be that the Board of Psychologist Examiners manage this in Arizona. But we'll see where this goes.
Okay. And then I know that, I guess, do you have a timeline for when you plan to have a lot of the proposed legislation written? I know you're a year out from from that, but when would it be possible to see like your the draft of what you're actually proposing?
There is a model bill that we have adapted for Arizona. It's recommended by APA. I'm happy to share that with the board. I can send a copy to Heidi.
Is that it? So we have, what did you provide us with, Heidi?
I think we saw it in the materials of the previous legislative committee.
Yeah, I just want to make sure, Dr. Berry, what he's alluding to is what was already sent to us. Is that correct? Or has there been another iteration of that language?
The bill itself has not been changed for the final submission.
Okay, so we have it.
Okay.
And it's been distributed, yes.
So the APA model legislation for prescriptive authority. I guess that when I looked over this, it does talk about some of the courses that are required, but doesn't say anything about is this going to be a master's degree, like a master's in psychopharmacology, or
yes.
Nor is there specific information about the supervised experience. I just was hoping for a bit more detail on what that would actually look like.
Dr. Meyer, if I can interject, what I anticipate would happen if this legislation were to be passed and this board is established as the regulatory authority for this area of practice, we would need to promulgate administrative rules. So the details that you are, I'm sure, thinking about would be addressed in the rules. So that's
not sort of part of the legislation.
Pardon?
That would not be part of the legislation.
Correct. The legislation would establish the broad authority, but the details would be in the rules, hence the need to have a time frame for us to put those key details in place.
Okay. Thank you for educating me on that. Thank you, Dr. Berry. Those were the concerns I had, and obviously I'm just getting ahead of the cart. So thank you.
Dr. Meyer, just to quickly follow up, my understanding is that the standard is it will be a master's in psychopharmacology available only to people who are already licensed psychologists. And there is a pretty long, from my point of view, period of physician-supervised experience after coursework before you can get the credential.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Bob, you're muted.
I was wondering why Heidi wasn't reacting. I said, here we go with another rules committee just after having abolished it. My understanding having a little knowledge of this area is that we're looking at a 2-year postdoctoral master's in psychopharmacology, followed by a national examination and an internship supervised experience of some sort tied in with that before or after the passing of the national exam. The national exam has now been placed within ASPPB. They are now the responsible party for that exam and administer that exam the way they would psychologists. In all states except Louisiana, this regulatory responsibility falls with their psychology board. And that, I think, is the way the model legislation would read as well. And I think that's appropriate. I have one quick question. And Dr. Berry, do you foresee any substantial opposition?
We anticipate opposition from organized physician groups. There are a number of individual medical practitioners who are supportive of this. Many of us have been asked in the course of our own practices, why can't we just prescribe rather than having to defer to a primary care physician, for example? So I think that there is a support on an individual basis. There continues to be opposition from formal medical organizations.
Any org support among psychologists in opposition?
I don't think that this is a universally approved course of action as far as psychologists are concerned, but the opposition that we encountered in previous efforts to get here is not materializing. I have been told personally by the lobbyists for the university, the state universities, that they will remain neutral through this. They can't be anything more than that because of the medical school. I've also been told that the clinical departments, which actually sucker punched us several years ago, will remain on the sideline. They no longer are given enough leeway to chime in individually. I also haven't heard of individual psychologists, whether in academia or clinical practice within the state association or otherwise, who are expected to oppose this. So I think, and I've also been told that the legislature is much more amenable to this kind of expansion of scope of practice for professions in general than it has ever been in the past. So I really think that we're, the climate politically, both within the profession and beyond, and in the, certainly in the state legislature, is much more amenable to this kind of proposal than it has been in the past.
I agree with you. The only organized group that I foresaw was PCSAS, who has taken a fairly firm stance against it. But I agree with your view on the legislative atmosphere. As you know, I've served in public health for 3 decades now.
But who's counting?
Who's counting? And I can tell you that 80% of behavioral health dollars spent in this country are spent through public health agencies. We are certainly constantly at a loss for prescribing clinicians. When the state takes a look at the dollar amounts it spends, currently, because of the captive market and it being a market which can claim its own price right now, we're in a desperate need to bolster our agencies, our organizations, and have more services available to more people. I'm constantly amused that everyone wants universal coverage and everyone wants more people covered and employed and everyone supports this effort or that effort. And the more people you cover, the more people come in, but no one ever thinks about where are we gonna get the clinical staff to see them? Where are we gonna get the prescribers to evaluate them? How are we going to provide the services for all these new people that are covered? And that crisis that went through us with Obamacare when we added 270,000 new families, which desperately needed to be added to the Medicaid rolls, we didn't have the pipeline full of clinicians to see those people. And we certainly didn't have the pipeline full of prescribers to see those people. I think anybody with half a brain looking at this issue, it remains a crisis. It remains a need. It remains something that just plain dollars and cents say, who the hell is the best qualified in looking at history and development and behavior? Psychologists. And if you gave them two more years of psychopharmacology training, I think you'd have a hell of a workforce developing. And it's been for those and a myriad of other reasons that I've supported these efforts over the years. And I wish your group luck. I hope they continue to work in that area, and that you keep the board updated. And when the time is right and there's a bill ready, I hope it comes before this board so we can take up the issue of supporting it.
Thank you, Dr. Bahansky, and thank you, members of the board. I will stay in touch.
Thanks. Very good. As I move down the agenda, we are looking at agenda item 7, discussion, consideration, and possible action concerning the potential proposed legislative changes for 2021, 55th Arizona State Legislature, first regular session. And we have three issues. Heidi, could you update us on the first?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So middle of last week, Wednesday, I believe, I reached out yet again to the governor's office to ask for an update relative to this topic. This committee, I'm sure, recalls that a preliminary step to our stakeholder engagement efforts needed to include the governor's office in that process. The response that I received essentially asked me to go over the issue again and, you know, identify the salient points, the concerns, the questions, and so forth. So I reiterated what it is that the board is requesting, and I asked at that time for a response in time for this meeting or for someone from the governor's office to attend this meeting so we could have some meaningful exchange on the topic. I was assured we would have something one way or the other, and unfortunately we do not have anyone at this meeting, and I do not have an update to share at this time. I can continue seeking and requesting that information in the hopes that we have something available for the board meeting, since legislative discussion will be on that agenda as well. That would be October 2nd.
Thank you for your efforts. And as already pointed out, this is an election year. And as such, there are other agendas that sometimes get in the way of nuances like this one may appear to some folks. And I appreciate your follow through and those efforts. You know, it's if it wasn't for those three police officer cases, I don't know that we'd ever look at this. But it certainly made the issue very, very clear to us that there are some concerns out there that I think would be helpful if we could address them. All right, item number 2, revisiting the topic of individuals who have completed postdoctoral training requirements and continue to work as psychology something or others, yet remain unlicensed.
Dr. Bukansky, can I ask a quick question about the previous item?
Oh, certainly. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Pekonen, is there a point at which we say we're not going to get a response from the governor's office and move forward ourselves?
That's a fair question, Dr. Meyer. Ms. Galvin and I have discussed that on more than one occasion, and we do feel strongly that it would be precarious for us to move forward in any fashion without either some tacit indication of tacit agreement by the governor's office, or better yet, some clear direction. This issue, or moving forward without being informed of the governor's position, I think is perilous. So we are very much of the mindset that we need this clarity before we do anything else.
Okay, thank you.
And that's a policy issue though. You know, when it comes down to it, how you want to proceed.
Indeed, yes. If the board directs me to move forward, of course I will do exactly that.
I see no reason not to listen to you all, so thank you.
I've been reminded repeatedly, we're a regulatory board, not a policy-setting board. We have to stay within the lines, and I think when we find the lines blurred is when we ask the question, and hope there's a response. All right, the topic of postdocs that are not licensed.
Yes, so this is on the agenda because I'm sure you recall at the previous committee meeting in August 26th, this committee wrestled with this issue, and the conclusion was we as a board can't possibly regulate everyone in every circumstance. However, this issue sort of emerged again during the board's September 4th meeting. You probably remember one of the informal interviews you conducted concerned the supervision or the quality of the supervision that was provided to an individual who was working as a psychology associate, and the board found numerous violations or numerous instances of the supervisor violating that statute, that and found her that she had committed unprofessional conduct. So at the end of the meeting, there was a request to put this issue back before the committee. I wasn't certain if there was something specifically from that informal hearing that prompted that, or perhaps the suggester didn't remember that we had had this conversation. So out of an abundance of caution, I put it on this agenda to see if there's anything that this committee feels they should do differently or in addition to what you decided last month.
Thoughts or concerns, committee members?
When we decided last month, I thought we were going to try to address this.
The minutes, let's find the minutes, just a moment. I'll refer you to the section when I find it. The committee agreed by consensus not to formulate any recommendations to the board on this subject at this time. The committee discussed the gray area that ensues when an individual isn't under the board's authority. It's, you know, it is a challenging issue. There may be opportunities perhaps to address this from the education perspective, which, you know, could certainly, the board could take that on some level. The profession, we would really encourage the professional association to take up this issue as well. So that's where we left it at the committee level discussion.
See, I think it wouldn't be that hard to say, if you've started this process and you fall under our jurisdiction, that you either have to retract from that or that you have to continue under supervised practice until you're fully licensed. I think it's not that big of a leap to clarify that, and it's not at all overstepping our bounds. It makes sense to me to close this up, not to direct others to better educate about it.
There's fortunately only a few number of people that this affects. The preponderance of individuals who are doing postdocs under supervision have a training agreement that says they have that supervision responsibility with an identified supervisor, and that covers the 2-year period. We're looking then at those people past that 2-year period that don't fall under the written training agreement that essentially stipulates that temporary license is in effect for 2 years. The solution, or the simplest solution to this, is in the proposed board statement, substantive policy statement that we have on a postdoctoral training agreement, what should be in there. It would be a statement that the supervisor continues to be responsible for supervising that clinical work until such responsibility is discharged through the person obtaining licensure or obtaining another supervisor. And I think that that makes it clear.
I like that. I think that sounds great.
Yeah, I think, I mean, hearing everything that has been said, I think, I mean, so long as the supervisor is responsible for everything that the postdoc psychology associate, whatever you might want to call him or her, is doing, that satisfies, from a jurisdictional perspective, our role to, you know, serve the public health and safety.
And I propose we take that before the board for approval for amending the postdoctoral training statement.
Well, I think the only tweak would be you can't require the supervisor to guarantee that that supervisee gets additional supervision or gets some other supervisor, but rather that they can't continue to practice in that agency. Like, that's what, how do we say you cannot practice without supervision? And that also needs to be on the licensee, not just the supervisor.
And I think the wording is exactly what you said, Dr. Meyer, is the postdoctoral resident is not allowed to practice without supervision.
Okay.
And period, they have to find it. I don't think it's the responsibility of the 2-year supervisor who did their best and they didn't, or they moved on to another entity. The realism is that in the public health system, once they lose that 2-year license, they're essentially a behavioral health technician,
right,
and should be limited to those tasks. The problem, of course, comes in private practices where somebody can be paid more money than a behavioral health technician to be seeing someone's clients. But in that case, they should have the supervisory responsibility if they're working right in a private practice.
Would you want to clarify that they have to receive supervision in accordance with, you know, postdoctoral training instead of saying just need supervision?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, those requirements continue. The same, just because you reached your 3,000 hours doesn't mean that the supervision requirements change. That continues.
We can't have this crew donning white coats that say doctor and psychologist and go running around agencies and organizations doing God knows what to people. And we've seen some of what the God knows what is in the last case reviews we did. They need to have an accountable supervisor. Great. Could we draft something up like that for the board, please?
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you, Heidi. My phone is going out again on me. I think there was a number 3 that was an other. Is that accurate, as I recall?
Yeah.
Could you update us on other?
It's up to you. If you have something to add to the agenda, that's what other addresses. I have nothing else at this time.
Okay, just checking.
What was there discussion about this school psychology independent practice, or did that was a separate committee going to be drawn, or did we decide to just drop that?
Yes, Dr. Meyer, that is on the October 2nd agenda for purposes of the board having that discussion and the appointment process to begin.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you.
Are you volunteering? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, I know nothing about school psychology.
I think we've had our targets on Dr. Catarino.
Wanted to be sure.
Dr. Ramona, as they are both school psychologists as well. All right, my phone is back on. So now we're down to agenda item number 8, new agenda items for future meetings.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, we can schedule chink in as many more meetings as we, you know, possibly need to between now and the end of the year, if any of the committee members are wondering. We, of course, you know, may learn of other issues that would necessitate a committee meeting. My goal was to try to have the bulk of our work done by early November at the latest, so we would at least know the course that we were going to chart. But I leave it up to this committee to direct me when we might need to meet again.
Let me ask you, if I might, under this item, for an update on a sponsor.
Oh, yes. Thank you for prompting my memory on that. I did reach out to, she is currently still Representative Nancy Bartow, at least through the end of this year. We anticipate the strong likelihood that she will be elected to the Senate. I have not heard from her relative to whether she would be interested in sponsoring our legislation in the next session. As a courtesy, I think it's the appropriate thing to do to ask the previous sponsor, former sponsor, if she wishes to continue the efforts. If, however, she suggests to us that by virtue of her committee assignment, which we don't know what that will be in the Senate, if she suggests that we route our bill to a different sponsor, someone who's serving on the health committee, I will, of course, respect her wishes and, you know, follow her direction.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I think she's running unopposed in the senatorial race, so I think your statement that the likelihood of her being elected to the Senate are perhaps better than 50-50.
I did couch my request in terms of this is predicated on the outcome of the election, because I felt that that was something I should do. So
certainly. Although I've always called her Senator Bartow, regardless of what position she's held, I've always seen her in that role, and I guess first started working with her in that role. Okay, any other new agenda items from committee members that we'd like to place here? Hearing none, I'll move to agenda item 9, adjournment. Is there a motion for such?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
And we have a motion and a second. All in favor, aye.
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 Hearing nothing opposed, then we're going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much for attending, everyone. I apologize for my electronic slafus here early in the meeting, but we got through it and got back on, and I'm appreciative of everyone's efforts and discussion and attendance. So have a good rest of the day and a great week.
Thank you. You too. Bye, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.